I had seen his work myself, and I had watched and heard other people reverently holding a piece of pottery and saying, oh, that's a Russell Mott. And then I got to meet the real Russell Mott, and that was wandering through the Artavino's Desert Crossing, kind of a Christmas fair type of thing where you can purchase all things beautiful. And that in a corner there was the man himself. Welcome, Russell. It's good to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's my favorite NPR station, and I couldn't be happier to be here. And I must say, your use of the word reverent now, you must be careful, because if these people were lugging around pieces of mine that I made when I first started, reverent was not the word.
Well, how
helpless might have been the word.
Injured. How were
you? Well, my pottery in houses sometimes holds it down in case of hurricanes. You know what I mean?
So you started big, did you?
Yeah, I started big and heavy.
Okay, well, let's go all the way back to Mott the Child. Where were you born? Where are you from?
I was born in the Deaconess Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts.
Boston, Mass. And then?
My father died when I was very young, and I lived with my grandfather and my mother, and I went to Radcliffe, actually, in swaddling clothes at one point, and while she was getting a degree.
Well.
And my grandfather was, as my grandmother used to say, went to the law school. He went to Harvard Law School, and they were very kind to me. We all got along well, and my mother remarried, and from then on, things just moved. I suppose before I was 20, I must say, I lived in Washington, I lived in New York, and all over the place.
And what brought you to El Paso? Las Cruces. You are from Las Cruces.
30 this year. Mm-hmm. Kate and I met in New Hampshire, and New Hampshire has and had at that point even worse winters than it has now. And she'd had enough of it. She was born in Bennington, Vermont.
Kate's your wife.
Right. And she's a very forgiving woman, but she doesn't forgive the snow. So she finally said, I want to go somewhere where I can garden 365 days a year. And I said, well, let's get a map. And so we rented a truck and we came out here. And there's, you know, we've been here ever since.
And what was your career at that point in time?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've had several. Mm-hmm. And when we came out here, I was working as a therapist, counseling people, and as I had worked in the Harris County Jail in Houston and some other places. And I finally got a job working at the prison outside Chris's. Then I like to tell people, when I got well, I quit.
So you were are you a psychologist or a professional?
Not anymore.
No, when
I stop something, I stop something. I became a potter in 2000, that was after 25 years of being a commercial photographer, and the night I decided I was going to be a potter, 3 months after 9/11, I stopped taking pictures, and I haven't taken a picture since.
So you've been through various Russell Motts have shucked shells.
Some more likable than others. Some with very, very varying histories, including almost a decade in Vietnam and some other stuff.
Wow! So you bring so much into then a career as a potter, which you have only done since 2002, just over 10 years. And your work is just crazy good. It's just beautiful. Would you describe your work for the listeners?
What happened was I almost accidentally took up pottery. And Kate and I closed a couple of businesses. We went to a teenage referral prison in Nevada. We taught there for 6 months, and for several reasons which aren't worthy of discussion here, we came back to Cruces, and I knew that I was not going to do either of the things that I had dropped. So I get up in the middle of the night one time. I was working my daughter's horses for her, and she was having a back problem. We were living over there, and I stayed up all night with my dogs, and in the morning my wife looked at me and she said, you've been up all night, what's going on? And I said, well, I've decided what I'm going to do. She said, what's that? And I said, I'm going to become a potter. She looked at me and she said, well, that's really wonderful news. I said, how did you come up with that? And I said, I haven't got a clue.
Well, darn, I thought maybe she had an idea, but nope.
No, she's a fine artist. She went to RISD back in the day and has done her own work and taught art for 20 years and, you know, has a wonderful eye. And
is she a visual artist, a painter, or what type
she draws, paints, stuff. Okay. You know, and she doesn't do it anymore, and now she runs a gallery, and she's always been enormously supportive of my attempts at becoming a better potter. And And so once I decided that, since then, and when I went back after chasing around the country, finding five really wonderful people to work with, I finally decided, I went back, opened up the studio, and, you know, the rest is history until about 3.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I was finding it enormously difficult to sell what my favorite part of pottery is, and that's Riku pottery.
Yes.
Which is a Japanese tradition, started in the 16th century, came to this country in the beginning of the 20th. It's very idiosyncratic, very hectic, enormously fun, but difficult to sell in a recession because it's decorative and people want pottery they can take home and use.
Hmm.
And so Kate and I decided we would start doing stoneware, some of which you saw on the table at Artivino's.
Yes,
and
it's lovely.
It is her work on doing the glazing and all of that.
I wondered
that
how
you,
the division of labor worked
there.
No,
all of the design work is hers.
Oh, okay.
And what's happened is that she has now gotten so facile using glazes as opposed to pastels and that sort of thing that she's doing illustrations on these pieces of
what
slab.
An interesting collaboration you've
exactly.
come up with.
Yeah.
Well, now the people not in the pottery world, self-included, might not know names like Claude Smith III, Steve Hemingway, Dave Porter, Alex Williams. These are some of the people with whom you apprenticed.
Steve Brampton.
Yes. And how did they receive you when here you stroll in, no longer a teenager, and say, I want to learn how to...
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, Hemingway's a good example. I was on my way to Minneapolis to see my aunt, who was having a hard time, and it looked like she was on the cusp of becoming a prisoner to Alzheimer's or something in that family.
Okay.
And I wanted to see her, as it turned out, for the last time, because after that, when I visited, she didn't know who I was. And so flying up, I had a copy of Ceramics Monthly. In Ceramics Monthly with this article about Steve Hemingway, who lived in Minnetonka, who was 12 miles from where I was going.
Okay. Is this one of these synchronicity things?
Making this up, Monica. I'm not.
No,
so
no. It
I,
is.
I read the
I
article.
Agree with it. It's just
I said,
stunning.
I am calling this cat when I get to Minneapolis. So I call him up and I told him the story. He said, "You have got to be kidding me."
Okay. Now there's an honest reaction. So, you know, I could see that.
So I went out and we talked for about an hour and I hung out in his. I was there for a couple of days, and I went out there a couple of times, and I said, here's what I'd like to do. And 3 months later, I was back in Minnetonka, and I stayed for about 3 months. And he is, in my estimation, within the top five artistic Riku workers, artists, technicians in the country.
At any point in your interactions with him or these other known names in the potting or the ceramics world, did you ever get the feeling that they were impatient with you, that you just weren't picking something up, or do you just have the facility for it?
Oh, God.
Are you a gifted child?
No.
You've got to be. Come on.
There were some hard days.
Okay.
When I was with Porter in the woods in Missouri, you know, and that sort of thing, you know, there were some hard days. These guys were really good. I mean, guys were really good.
But did you ever doubt your decision to become a
potter? No, I never doubted my decision.
Okay.
And I knew in the company of these people, one thing about potters that I didn't find particularly universal amongst photographers, quite frankly. Photographers don't tell each other secrets. Potters tell you anything.
Interesting.
You
what
ask
interesting...
a potter how he did this, he's more than willing to tell you.
I'd never thought of dividing up different disciplines according to who'll share and who won't. I thought that was more of a personality thing.
Well, my view of photographers may be jaded, so I'm not saying that this is necessarily the case. But
okay, but
I
it's an interesting comment, though.
I can tell you that amongst potters, I mean, I remember calling a guy up who was world famous.
Yeah.
Caught him in his studio and asked him a question. And he said, who are you? And I told him, I said, been doing this about 2 years. And, you know, I had this problem with Riku and all this sort of thing. And I'm just taking a flyer, see if you'll talk to me. He said, call me back. I said, I'm in the middle of something in my studio. He says, call me back in 2 days at 12 o'clock noon, and I'll talk to you during my lunch hour. We talked for an hour and a half.
Wow.
And he gave me formulas and this and that and this.
Oh,
and that. I mean,
what
I was
treasure.
Astounded.
Yeah.
Just astounded.
Well, again.
I met Claude Smith and Steve Brampton, who Brampton's probably the king of Riku in the United States, written books and this and that, you know, and work is held by museums and all that sort of thing. And, you know, we're best of friends.
Well, at this point, you're 10 years in your 11th year as a potter, and What is your zenith at this point in time? At some point, did it occur to you that you were, like, really good? Or when did you hit stride? Is there any defining moment for you?
That's a really interesting question. And I, one of the reasons that I don't do this is that I have had an episodic life of different careers and mm-hmm. things going on in my life. And quite frankly, when I figured out why I was a potter, which mm-hmm. was about a year after I started, mm-hmm. then it no longer became an issue mm-hmm. about whether I was going to really be good.
That's just what you are at that point now.
Yeah, for a very specific reason. And the reason is
yes?
that I'm a thrower.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about pottery when I chose it. I had never, ever.
Did you like pottery?
I didn't have a position. I didn't have an attitude or judgment on pottery at all. I never collected any. I didn't know pottery.
Wow.
I'd never been in a studio.
We will have to just find out why you chose pottery.
You need some coffee? I go get a coffee cup. I get it. You know, at Tiffany's in New York or Walmart. Doesn't make any difference. As long as it holds coffee, it gets warm. So there I am that morning, and I'm looking at my wife and I say, "I'm going to be a potter." And her question was well based because I had no clue why I chose. The intriguing part about pottery for me was the potential of being a thrower. I don't know why, but it just did.
Mm-hmm.
It never occurred to me to try molding or sculpting or hand building or any of that thing first.
It chose you, it sounds
whatever like. Whatever it was. The very first time I sat down at a wheel, I never challenged that judgment at all. It became instantaneous that was what I was going to do. And then a year later, I knew why I became a potter. And the reason was it had to do with basically the latest chapter in this long life. I'm 74 years old in a couple of weeks, and I am gifted by having extraordinary health. And so none of the work, any of that, made any difference. It just I get up every morning at 4 o'clock. It's not an issue. And I work 12 hours. And I knew back then in 2003 why this was all necessary and why it was going to work. If you ask any potter this question, universal, they can't give you another answer because there is no other answer. They will tell you that if you're not centered emotionally, when you're working the clay and you're on a wheel, the clay will have your lunch. There is no other way to put it. And my life, as episodic and volcanic in change as it was, needed something that would slow me down, settle me on a path that made sense going through my basically last chapter in life. And as a result, it has been successful because that's exactly what happens. If you want to center clay, you better be centered or you will fight it. The clay will fight it and you will lose.
What an amazing invitation for our listeners to discover your work. My guest today is Russell Mott. He is a potter living in Las Cruces, and his work is fabulous. He and his lovely wife, Kate, have MVS Studios in Las Cruces, and that's at the
north end of the downtown mall.
North end of the downtown mall. It's 535 North Main Street in Las Cruces.
Across the street from the Moose Club and City Hall.
All right. That's pretty specific. And if you want to see his work, go to mottpots.com. That's MOTTPOTTS.com. And you'll find him under Mottpots all over in Facebook and elsewhere. Russell, what a joy to visit with you, and I look forward to seeing more of your work. Keep producing.
Thanks very much for having me. It's been fun.